Thanks, Ian. Brethren and sisters and dear young people. Just one further comment on the notes. You may have got pages 116 and 117 last time. If you did, destroy them and use the ones that you got tonight. There is no actual difference in the material, it's just that a page has been set out a little bit differently and consequently page 118 won't flow on very smoothly, so that's the only reason. Well, it is quite some weeks since we had our Rhema class. You may recall on that occasion that we did actually conclude by having a look at 1 Corinthians chapters 8 and 10 as a basis for what we want to consider this evening in this excellent chapter, very, very important chapter, very exhortational chapter of Romans chapter 14. 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and chapter 10 covers a very similar material to Romans. So I think in some ways it helps us understand the material that is in this 14th chapter. Just look briefly then at Corinthians 8 again. The issue here was the matter of eating meat which was offered to idols. Now we're not concerned with that so much as we are in defining the two parties that were involved in this particular situation. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and verse 1 we read there, "Now as touching things offered unto idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffeth up, but love edifieth. If any man think that he knoweth anything, he knoweth nothing yet as he ought to know. But if any man love God, the same is known of him. As concerning therefore the eating of those things that are offered in sacrifice unto idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world, and that there is none other God but one." So, in 1 Corinthians chapter 8, Paul is talking about a particular type of knowledge. It was the knowledge which was in the brother who said, "I know that that idol is nothing, therefore if there is some meat that has been offered in sacrifice unto that idol, and I eat that meat, then that meat is in no way affected, and in no way does it affect my conscience whatsoever. And in fact, that brother is quite at liberty to eat that meat as far as that situation is concerned. If it's just a matter of the meat and it's been offered to an idol and he's going to eat it and it doesn't affect his conscience, then he's quite at liberty to eat that meat. His knowledge says that meat is completely unaffected by having been offered to the idol." And he is correct. He is, in the terms of Romans, the strong brother. He knows that there is nothing wrong with that meat. So on the one hand then, he is quite within his liberty to eat that meat. That's the first point. Now in Corinthians, Paul is taking very much the side of what is called the weak brother. And in a few moments we're going to define what we mean by strong and weak, because it's probably a little bit different from what we might occasionally call strong and weak brethren, ecclesias or whatever. I don't think we should really even think in those terms. It's very dangerous. But certainly not along the lines that we would probably traditionally think. The weak brother, then, is the one for whom Christ died, as was the strong brother. In Corinthians, Paul is telling this strong brother that through your knowledge, you are being puffed up to the point of saying, "I don't care what anybody else says, I will eat that meat, because there's nothing wrong with it." The argument is, he is quite right, there's nothing wrong with it, but what is it doing to the weak brother? Well, he says it's putting a stumbling block in the way of the weak brother. He says you're sinning against the weak brother. You're going to cause your weak brother to stumble. Through your knowledge, he says that later on in the chapter, verse 11 of 1 Corinthians 8, through your knowledge shall the weak brother perish. So we've got the strong brother then, who can see the situation very clearly, and he's quite right. We've got another brother called a weak brother. He is weak in faith. He's not weak in the faith, although Romans appears to say that. He is weak in faith, and we're going to define that very, very shortly. Now the situation in Corinthians then is, the knowledgeable brother, who knows the idol is nothing, is puffed up with his knowledge. He is the strong brother. He says, "I can do what I want to." The weak brother, on the other hand, is perishing because he is following the example of the strong brother, but he's doing it with a weak conscience, and his conscience is thereby becoming defiled. Now that may not be totally clear to everybody. That doesn't matter. That in fact is what Paul is going to talk about tonight in Romans, because Romans views it from a slightly different angle. in Corinthians, the issue really is, what has the strong brother done in relation to the weak brother? And the strong brother is being condemned because of his lack of consideration for the weak brother. In Romans 14, it's a much more balanced case. In fact, if anything, it is the weaker brother that is possibly being condemned, but it's very much a balanced situation. So we've got the picture then. The strong brother is also the knowledgeable brother of Corinthians. The weak brother is the one whose conscience is defiled because he follows the example of the strong brother, but he doesn't see it the same way as the strong brother does. He is weak in faith, and it worries him that he's eating that meat, because as far as he is concerned, that meat is identified with that idol. And every time he eats that meat, his conscience is troubled. In that case, he shouldn't be eating it. Now you say, well, who's right and who's wrong in this situation? We're going to get to the end of the night, brethren and sisters, and say, look, we can't say that the strong brother's always wrong or always right, or the weak brother's always wrong or always right. And we're going to be confronted with situations like this every day of our lives, and we're going to have to make the decision. And sometimes you and I are going to be the strong brother, and sometimes we're going to be the weak one. And it's got nothing at all to do, really, with our standing in the truth, the length of time we've been in the truth, how much we study the Bible or anything. It's a matter of what we call conscience. Well, let's go then to Romans. Romans chapter 14, which is the chapter set down for tonight. We're going to see the way in which Paul deals with this particular subject. First of all, what do we understand by the strong and the weak brother? Well, I think we've considered fairly briefly already the situation for strong brother. The word strong doesn't actually occur in Romans 14, but it does occur in the very opening verse of the next chapter, which is chapter 15. We then who are strong need to bear the infirmities of the weak. So the terms strong and weak do come from this particular environment, although the word strong as such doesn't occur in Romans 14. There is nevertheless a strong brother being referred to. So the strong brother then is the one who can see the situation very clearly. He can see that there is nothing wrong with that food, and therefore he can eat it. And he's quite right. Now what about the weak brother? If you've got your notes open there, page 116, which is the opening, of course, of our notes on chapter 14, has a good comment towards the bottom of the page. The comment from Brother Mansfield. The comment is this, the second paragraph from the bottom of the page. Brother Mansfield comments as follows. The expression, that is, him that is weak in faith, the expression does not relate to a person who is faulty in his understanding of the basic doctrines of the truth. So that's the first thing. He's not some individual who doesn't know what the truth's all about. That's the first thing. Rather, he is one who is full of doubts as to his conduct, so that he manifests an over-scrupulosity in such matters as eating and drinking. He is uncertain in his mind, and therefore weak in faith. Not weak in the faith, but weak in faith, or the conviction he should manifest. So he's not sure, is it right to eat that meat or is it not right to eat that meat? There's Brother A over there, the strong brother, he's eating the meat and he says there's nothing wrong with it, but I'm not sure about that. It worries me. And then perhaps in the end, he decides, well, he's going to eat that meat, and then he's trying to live with the difficulty that's been created. Whose fault? Well, in Corinthians, Paul would say it's the fault of the strong brother not recognising the problem that he's created for the weak brother. Okay, the argument in Corinthians applies. In Romans, he takes a much more balanced approach, and he says, well, the weak brother is in no position to demand that the strong brother should give up his meat. Because, you see, the weak brother is weak because his convictions are weak. He's not sure. Now, it's obvious that in the first instance in Romans, that the division was Jew and Gentile, but it didn't stop there. You see, if you come in out of the Jewish faith, you upheld certain days as being more holy than other days, some meats that were acceptable and unacceptable, that was your whole environment. So you come in from that environment, and you are mixing now with Gentiles who come in from a much freer environment. And they said, well, there's nothing wrong with what you eat, and they were right. And you were saying, but I just can't come to grips with the fact that it's all right to eat that bit of meat. I just can't accept it. My conscience has difficulty in accepting it. Well, he had to do something about it. He was the weak brother. So he is the one who is weak in faith or in the conviction he should manifest. This leads him, in the context of Romans now, to impose restrictions on himself. I'm not going to touch that. I will never touch that. You'll never get me touching that. And furthermore, you shouldn't either. Well, why shouldn't the other person? Well, because I don't think he should. Well, why don't you think he should? Well, because my conscience says that he shouldn't. Well, what's your conscience got to do with it? Well, mumble, mumble. You see, and it gets into the area of something a bit indefinable and a bit emotional. So, as Brother Mansfield rightly said, this leads him to impose restrictions on himself and on others that go beyond the requirements of the law of Christ. So what we're trying to do at the moment, brethren and sisters, is simply establish the background to this chapter. When we've got the background, we're going to go through it in narrative form. It doesn't require in-depth study of each verse. It becomes, in fact, a narrative type of discourse. And believe it or not, we'll probably finish Romans 14 tonight. You've got plenty of pages of notes anyway to read there afterwards. But once we've got the background, it's then the matter of following an argument. So there's our situation. You might notice at the top of page 116 that we read right there that in this chapter, Paul settles some delicate questions regarding the eating of meats and the observance of days. Such questions doubtless arose out of the fact that the ecclesia in Rome, as we've already seen, was composed of Jews and Gentile converts. Obviously, the Jews would find it difficult to adopt the liberal conscience of the Gentile relating to such observances, even as the Gentile would resist Jewish pressure in the matter. The apostle's intention here is to put a stop to all contention on the basis of peace, kindness, and love. And coming down to the next paragraph under those 6 points, and I've got this highlighted in my notes as being very important, this is the principle. The principles of this chapter are applicable to all similar questions of difference of opinion on non-essential or trivial matters, and if properly applied, they would settle much unnecessary controversy between brethren and sisters. Paul deals with two broad divisions in the ecclesia, not peculiar to Romans. Those two divisions are what he styles the weak brother and the strong brother. Now, one of the reasons we handed out to you that bit of paper, which mine's a different colour from yours, but yours might end up like that by the end of the night, which has the script of Romans 14 on there, is that I'm going to suggest that you might like to do a little bit of colouring in or scribbling on there. Some may like to do it straight in their Bibles, but we're going to engage as we go through in a bit of an exercise in identifying who Paul is speaking to at any time. Is it the weak brother or is it the strong brother? You know, it's a bit like going through the Song of Solomon and not knowing who the various speakers are. When you get to the end of it, you say, well, exactly what have I read? And Romans 14 is like that if we don't clearly identify who he's speaking to in each case. So for those who might like to put it straight in their Bibles, you can, but if you would like to do it on that bit of paper, then you can do it there, and afterwards you can transfer it into your Bible or do what you like with it. Are you telling us that's some more spare ones there? There are some more spare sheets if some would like some scribble paper. There's 3 people out the back, and there's 2 over here and 1, 2, 3 here. We've got about another 7 or 8. Or if anybody knows, they're definitely going to put it in their Bible or something and wants to hand over a sheet. Oh, looks like we've got plenty. For those who would like to follow the colours, and we're going to develop this as we go along by colouring in this one on the screen, which looks the same as yours. I'm going to use red and green. Red for the strong and green for the weak. No particular significance there, except hopefully the red and the green will stand out in contrast. Now, I think this is more than just a children's colouring in exercise. I think it's a very valuable one to help us understand what Romans 14 is about and see, therefore, what is the particular exhortation he gives to the strong as opposed to the weak. There were some things, for example, the strong must not do, some things the weak must not do. And it's not apparent unless we know exactly to whom he is talking. All right, well, we come then to the first verse, which is part of this first section, verses 1 to 13, mutual consideration and tolerance toward individual conscience. Verse 1 says, him that is weak in the faith, receive ye, but not to doubtful disputations. A better translation of that is the one we have in the NIV. Accept him whose faith is weak, without passing judgment on disputable matters. So already he's laying the basis of what is a weak brother. This is a brother who has difficulty with his conscience. Therefore, he says, accept him. Accept him, although he's got this weakness in his faith, accept him without passing judgment on disputable matters. So he's the brother that comes in and says, look, I believe I ought to keep that day different from all the rest. Now, it's not really an issue. If that's the way he wants to keep it, don't take issue with him over it. He's lived with that all his life. It's not a fundamental doctrine of the BASF. He believes that he should really He should anyway treat that day a little bit differently, whatever the day was. Maybe he felt that on the Sabbath he should really abstain from work. Well, okay, if that's the way he felt about it, let him do it. As long as, of course, he's not coming along and imposing it upon the rest of the ecclesia, that's the way he wants to do it, let him do it. It's a weakness in his faith. He should understand it doesn't apply anymore now. But he says, don't get into a dispute over it. So accept him whose faith is weak without passing judgment on disputable matters. Now the first question is, who's he speaking to here in this verse? Well, I'll do the first verse, and after that we'll see if we can get everybody else going in it as well. I'm going to colour in him that is weak in the faith. And by the way, we've already said that the word the isn't there. That identifies the weak brother. Him that is weak in the faith, receive ye. Now, who is the ye here? Well, he's obviously, in this case, talking to the strong brother, isn't he? That's quite obvious by implication. So, receive ye, now is the injunction to the strong brother. So this is what we're going to do. Him that is weak in the faith, you who are strong, you accept him without passing judgment on disputable matters. Brother Carter comments, it is not a question of wrong doctrine that is involved, neither is it a question of disorderly life. Weak in the faith means, as the context clearly shows, that some were sensitive in conscience concerning eating certain foods. They had not been able to shake off the idea that the eating of certain meats was morally wrong, or that the meat which had been offered to the idols was sacrificial meat, and eating it involved an acknowledgement of the idol. To certain minds, asceticism makes a potent appeal, and such would be most influenced. Asceticism is a withdrawal, a negative sort of thing. You know, the touch not, taste not, handle not of Colossians chapter 2. Okay, there are some people who have a bias that way because of their background or whatever, and that's the way they see things. Well, don't get into a dispute over it if it doesn't involve a fundamental matter. We come then to verse 2. For one believeth that he may eat all things. Who is that, the strong or the weak brother? One believeth that he may eat all things. Strong or weak, and we'll call for strong. Okay, so we colour that one in red. For one believeth that he may eat all things. Another, who is weak, eateth herbs. And of course, that's obvious then. That's the green one, isn't it? Another, who is weak, eateth herbs. So this is the first issue that he takes up. The matter of the eating of meat as against eating of vegetables. The weak brother... Well, let's take it direct from our notes here under the word believer. It means to have faith, from the same root as, of course, the word faith in verse 1. This man has a firm conviction that he may eat anything. This is the strong brother. The weak brother does not have this liberty of conscience. He feels that meat should be excluded, and therefore he eats only vegetables. And the word herbs there, the Greek word lakanon, really means vegetables. So to be on the safe side, because meat may possibly have been offered to idols, he says, I'm going to be on the safe side and I'm only going to eat vegetables. All right, let him only eat vegetables. But also make sure that weak brother doesn't go around telling everybody else they've just got to eat vegetables. Because it's not a fundamental issue. So there's two sides to the story. And as we've said, Romans 14 does tend to present a more balanced approach than does Corinthians. Not that Corinthians is unbalanced, but obviously there was a particular issue there that Paul wanted to deal with. Paul found himself in the category of those who have liberty in this matter. So Paul would have identified himself as being the strong brother. He would have considered himself as one that had liberty in this matter. Unless, of course, it be a cause of stumbling for others. Going through the introductory part, we'll get into some meaty material. We'll get into some substantial material later. We won't define whether it's animal or vegetable. Verse 3. Let not him that eateth despise him that eateth not, and let not him which eateth not judge him that eateth, for God hath received him. So already we're going to start to see that it's handy to have our colouring in. What's the first part? Let not him that eateth despise him that eateth not, and let not him which eateth not judge him that eateth, for God hath received him. What's the first part we're going to colour in, and what colour? Any suggestions? David? We're going to colour what in red? Let not him that eateth. Right, I agree. Let not him that eateth despise. Red. Now we change to green. Him that eateth not. Quite simple, isn't it? At the moment. Let not him that eateth despise. Now that word despise is going to be important. What can I do to that to make that look? Well, I'll just put a ring around it, that's what I'll do, because that's a word we're going to have to comment on. Let not him that eateth despise him that eateth not. Where do we go from there? Green again. Let not him which eateth not judge. And we'll put a ring around the word judge, because here are our two words now, despise and judge. And we're going to watch this, because Paul picks those words up and he follows them through. And he's going to show to us that the tendency is for the strong brother to despise the weak brother, and for the weak brother to judge the strong brother. Just bear that in mind, we'll develop, that's the theme really we're going to develop. So, green, let not him which eateth not judge. We change to red. Him that eateth. For God hath received him. And what colour's the last him? What colour's the last him? I did hear, but does everyone feel confident that it's red? Alright. So, let not him that eateth, that is the strong brother, despise him that eateth not, that is the weak brother. And let not the weak brother judge the strong brother. Alright? Now what's the difference between the words judge and despise? Let's pick them up. We'll see them in our notes, page 117, verse 3, towards the bottom of the page there. Despise, the Greek word there, means to make utterly nothing of. And I guess that means despise, doesn't it? It means to look down on. The word judge means to distinguish, to decide mentally or judicially, by implication to try or to condemn. So here is the situation then. We're told that the weak brother should not pass judgment on the strong brother. Strong brother says, I can eat the meat. The weak brother says, I can't, therefore you shouldn't. Now in this case, Paul takes the weak brother to task. And he says, you cannot make a decision. This is what this word judgment means, krino, to judge or condemn. And the same word is sometimes translated judge and sometimes condemn. It seems to have this connotation of condemnation. You can't condemn that strong brother because he sees nothing wrong with it, and there is nothing wrong with it. There might be to you, but there isn't to him. God has received the strong brother whose faith permits him to eat anything. If God has accepted him, then so should his brethren. Now we don't suddenly close it there and say, right, that's solved the issue. Because in a moment, of course, he's going to tell the strong brother, that's all very well, but you've got a responsibility to the weak brother. Oh, I'm sure you wouldn't tell him. You wouldn't try to anyway.
At the end of verse 3, friends.
Yep.
Teach me that the only don't let one of them display that is why the other one is wrong.
Yes.
Well, when that says at the end, for God hath received him,
yes.
Don't you think it's because God hath received them both?
Not according to the way I've coloured it in.
Because it then goes on in verse 4 to talk about the moment.
No. Not according to my colour again. So that's why I handed out that bit of paper, you see, and I judiciously said, at the end of the night, you may like to transfer it to your Bible or dispose of it in some other way. Now, you don't have to agree with the colour again. There will be some areas of non-fundamental nature where we may disagree with the colouring, and we're permitted to do that, and I won't advise you, and you mustn't judge me. Right. I mean, that's the issue, isn't it? I don't think so, Calvin, but I would agree that it is a grey area. I would be inclined to agree that it's a grey area, but I think you'll find as we go into verse 4, if you'd like to reserve judgment till we've done verse 4, that in verse 4, because he picks up this word judges, that he is therefore talking now to the weak brother. Because it seems that the word judge is the word that he lays at the feet of the weak brother. The weak brother is going around judging the other. Despise is the word that he lays at the feet of the strong brother. Well, I've got two at once. Oh, I'm sure that would be the logical extension of the argument. The use of the word punish there, though, is not because it necessarily applies in this case, but we put down the way in which the lexicon or the concordance would define the word krino, and it does start off from a root which means to distinguish, therefore to decide, and therefore the next part is once having decided, you therefore pass judgment on the other person because you've made up your mind, and the logical extension of that may be, in some cases, to actually punish. That's why the word is sometimes translated as condemn. So really the context will determine how far along the line you go with this word. I think in the context of Romans 14, it probably only goes as far as saying, well, I've made up my mind, I've decided, there's the line, that's wrong and that's right, as far as I'm concerned. And if that's the decision, well, and that's as far as it goes, that's all right. But when I start saying to you, you've got to come down on the same side of the fence as me, you say, but I don't feel inclined to, then that's when I'm starting to judge you and by implication condemn you. And it may be that I will ask their pleasure to take action against you. And that, of course, is when the whole thing has got out of balance. So there are grades in the meaning of that word as I understand it. I don't think that we have to apply the word punish in the fullest sense in Romans 14, but it could well have got that way. Someone over here, I think.
I don't normally concede to sisters in public debate, but I think the question has been raised.
Right. All right. So, he agrees with you, that is what he's saying, or it was the same question or something. Right. How are we going? We've had a brief look at the word despise and judge. They mean basically what they say. Despise is to look down on. Judge is to discern, make up your mind which way you're going, and then say everybody else has got to do it the same way as me in non-fundamental matters. Now, Calvin's anxiously awaiting us to get on to verse 4 to see how we handle this one. All right. Okay, Calvin, how are we going to colour this one in? I know you don't mind. You've got a grey pen. All right. Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? The suggestion is that because we're picking up this word judgest again, which is the term he used against the weak brother in verse 3, we should therefore presume that it's the weak brother that he's speaking to. Now, I would agree there might be a a fraction of a percent argument which says, well, I think that's straining it. But Paul is using the words, and I think we should follow his words through. He's told the weak brother back here, let not him which eateth not, in other words, you're a weak brother, don't judge the strong brother. Who art thou that judgest another man's servant? I think we've got to accept that as being the weak brother passing judgment on the strong. That being the case, we can colour in thou that judgest, or you can colour in the whole lot if you like, who art thou that judgest? Alright? Another man's servant. I'll just leave that open. To his own master, what colour are we going to make his? Red? To his own master, he standeth or falleth? He standeth or falleth? So it's telling the weak brother not to stand in judgment on the strong brother, because he's not answerable to the weak brother, he is answerable to his own master. It's to his own master, or it's before his own master, that he stands or falls. Yea, he shall be holden up, for God is able to make him stand. And he's got to be talking about this same brother. Yea, he shall be holden up, for God is able to make him stand. So God's accepted him. It's all right for you Jews in the first instance. You say that he shouldn't eat that meat. He's coming to the truth. He's got no background that gives him a problem like you have. God has accepted him. You are in no place to pass judgment on him. To you, it seems he's talking to the other person.
In verse 1, he's speaking to the strong brother.
Right.
And in later on in his chapter, he uses the words thy and your also to the strong brother.
Mm-hmm.
And in the whole chapter, he's speaking to the strong brother.
I would say you're right. I would say the chapter is mainly, on the basis of my colouring, it gets very, very much red towards the end there. Very much. Let's go back, verse 1. Him that is weak in the faith, receive ye, but not to doubt, for just imputations. I think that's probably just a general statement, yes, basically to the strong brother. Then he gives sort of definitions as to what the problem area is. So I think these verses we just looked at here are identifying the problem area as being food, and then, in a moment, the observance of days. So I think, I don't feel inclined to change those colours. But that doesn't mean I might at some later stage, but I think I feel quite happy with them as they stand. I won't ask for a vote as to who does or who doesn't, because it's not a fundamental issue, but please keep making comments, even if I disagree with you.
There is one theme that comes through here, John, which I think we have evident, that is that there is a difference when we talk about the disputation. The whole context does not necessarily involve in that context the doubt of disputation. It's the difference between doubt of disputation and an adjustment or a claim to fundamentals. Really, the criticism of the weak brother is that he is claiming that something that is thought to be a doubt of disputation is fundamentals.
Yes.
And that makes the difference between these two.
Yes, that's right. I'm not repeating things tonight for people at the back. I don't know how that's helping. What does that mean? It means you can't hear it. Alright, well, Arthur's last comment was a good one. Could you repeat that in a loud voice, because you said it well? Can you remember what you said? That the strong, weak brother was saying that something which was really
a doubtful disputation
was a fundamental issue. Yes, that's what the weak brother was doing. Yep. Agreed. Verse 5, let me just see if there's anything on verse 4 we should say. Well, the comment that I've highlighted here is that Paul's point is that the weak brother may accuse the strong brother of being lax or unscrupulous, but God has received him. Or as God has received him, this amounted to an impertinent interference with God's household. Furthermore, the servant is answerable to his own master, and his conduct is approved in this matter. Verse 5. One man esteemeth one day above another. Who does that, the weak brother or the strong brother? Green or red?
Green?
Right. One man esteemeth one day above another. Now, all right, if he wants to do that, let him do it. You see, he's weak. It doesn't mean that he's weak in the faith. It's just his background, his way of life. I just can't accept the fact that, you know, we go to work on the Sabbath or whatever.
So one man esteemeth one day above another. That's green.
Another esteemeth every day alike.
Right? That will be red. Another esteemeth every day alike.
Let every man be fully persuaded in his own mind. We don't need to colour that, because that, of course, is what Paul is trying to tell us we should do. So one man esteemeth one day above another, another esteemeth every day alike. Verse 6. He that regardeth the day regardeth it unto the Lord, and he that regardeth not the day, to the Lord he doth not regard it. I think we'll find that in some other translations that verse doesn't come through quite as cumbersome, is not quite as cumbersome as that. Top of page 119, you'll be pleased to see I have the NASB quoted there. Very impressed with the NASB. It's now entering actually into the notes. It's taken 118 pages to get in, but it's, mind you, it wasn't in my library just a few weeks ago, so now it is. And you'll notice there that it leaves out a fair amount of that verse, as in the King James Version. He who observes the day observes it for the Lord. That's about all it says. It doesn't give the negative part, he that regardeth not the day. That's the only translation we've put in there. Does anybody have anything other than the NASB or the King James tonight? No? And then it goes on to talk about meat. Right, well, it does appear, although it doesn't, we're not worried about it as far as the argument is concerned, it does appear that this latter part, which is, and he that regardeth not the day, to the Lord he doth not regard it, is not in the majority of manuscripts. However, because it's there, we can colour it in, because it's not going to worry us at all as far as our argument is concerned. What will happen then is that the first part of the verse, he that regardeth the day, is obviously the weak brother. He regards certain days, but as Paul says, okay, but he does it under the Lord. He's not doing it for his own sake. He's not insisting on keeping the Sabbath because he has a good time on the Sabbath. He's doing it because he's doing it under the Lord. But if we accept the Authorised Version, there is another brother who says, but I don't keep that day. I treat every day the same, and I'm doing that under the Lord. So we will colour that one in red. And he that regardeth not the day, to the Lord he doth not regard it.
That brings a vital aspect into it, really, because any other considerations that go under the cloak of my liberty in Christ, or sort of a salvation through some legal system, it's not included. They're not acceptable before God. It has to be done to the glory of God.
That's why we chose the theme tonight, do all for the glory of God, even though the words weren't actually in Romans 14. Right, thanks, sir. Stuart. The rest of that verse, he now talks about eating. He that eateth for the Lord, for he giveth God thanks. And what colour is that? Red. He that eateth for the Lord, for he giveth God thanks. And he that eateth not, green. To the Lord he eateth not, and giveth God thanks. Now we're starting to get a little clearer picture of the strong and the weak brother. The weak brother is not all that weak. He might be very knowledgeable, but his background, his environment, all sorts of things are causing him to view the truth a bit negatively. Doesn't mean he won't be in the kingdom. Doesn't mean he's unacceptable, but it does mean that he's got the potential of passing judgment on other people who don't see it the same way as him, and demanding of them certain standards. I would be prepared to say that there are some people who have broken away into what we might call splinter groups or fellowships, who've done so because of actually a weakness, that they believe, in fact, they are very strong. But what they are doing is they are imposing upon others their point of view, which other people don't accept as a fundamental point of view. I mean, of course, there are times when we break away because of fundamental points of view, but I think if one were to draw a family tree of some of the Christadelphian fellowships, so-called, around the world, and some people have done this, you'll see that little groups have broken away for all sorts of reasons, such as whether you believe the temptation of Christ was external or internal. That has been a matter of fellowship by some ecclesias, as in New Zealand, for example. Norm, I just said, Norm, because you looked at me, but you know New Zealand. And other such things as that, which we would not normally regard as fundamental issues. But a brother thinks about it very deeply. He becomes convinced that it's fundamental. He believes he's strong on this. Paul would say, well, frankly, you're weak on it. But, you know, we've got to then try and... Yes, Michael?
Brother, you know,
right. Now, you see, there could be, let's just say there could be some merit in things like that. I'm not taking up those 2 points, but long hair and driving motor cars, maybe there is. But how far does one go in imposing that as a rule? And, of course, that's what Paul's dealing with here, in principle. So, we've got that down to the end of verse 6. When we come into verse 7, in verse 7 he says, and this is where it starts to get a little tricky now, for none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. Do we do any colouring in that verse, yes or no? Yes. What are we going to colour in?
Well, one who is doing the things for the glory of God is living as possible. The one who is not doing
so you're suggesting that Paul is using living and dying here, not in an absolute sense, but in a sort of
Romans 6
type.
Well, dying for the flesh, living for Christ.
Yes, probably. I'm just trying to think. Romans 6. I'll say yes, because you're usually right when you make those statements, so I won't query it. Yes, okay. Or in other words, as we've set it out here in the notes, and you might like to look at this, under verses 7 and 8, and this is how I've coloured it in. I've coloured it in this way. None of us liveth, and I believe he's speaking of the strong brother there, none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. So none of us liveth is red. No man dieth is green. I think we ought to go on with verse 8 as well, because the two of them together. For whether we live, and I'm going to colour the we live in as red, we live unto the Lord. Coloured it in this way. None of us liveth, and I believe he's speaking of the strong brother there, none of us liveth to himself, and no man dieth to himself. So none of us liveth is red, no man dieth is green. And I think we ought to go on with verse 8 as well, because the two of them together. For whether we live, now I'm going to colour the we live in as red, we live unto the Lord, red, and whether we die, green, we die unto the Lord. Whether we live,
bread, therefore, or dye, green, we are the Lord's.
Now let's see what our notes tell us on this point. Under verses 7 and 8, about 6 or 7 lines from the top of our, coming down from the where it says verses 7 and 8, Paul is not concerned with physical life and death in this passage, but with their figurative significance. He equates living with doing, dying with abstaining. We have the strong brother who believes he has liberty to eat or to regard every day as consecrated to the Lord. The weak brother does not have the same liberty of conscience, but denies himself, does not eat, and sets certain days above others as sacred. The strong brother lives unto the Lord, the weak brother dies unto the Lord. But whether we live, therefore, or die, we are the Lord's. Now, Paul was very helpful. He gave us some easy ones to start with before he came to that one. But that's the suggestion of how we would understand that verse. And then following that, we have a little chart here, which, providing we understand these terms in the way in which Paul is using them, is a very helpful one. If you take it outside of the Romans notes and use it just as a standalone thing, well, then, of course, you could get horribly confused. Let's see the contrast between the strong and the weak brother. The strong brother is living, the weak brother is dying. That doesn't mean to say he's got no hope of getting into the kingdom. Doesn't mean to say he's on the path to death while the other one's on the path to life. They're both going to the kingdom. They're both going to be in the kingdom, we presume, all things being equal. But one is leading a positive life, the other one's a negative life. The negative life one is passing judgment on the positive one is despising the negative. All right, we follow that? The strong brother is free. The weak brother doesn't see himself as free. Strong brother is positive. The weak brother is negative. The strong brother does it to the Lord. The weak brother does it unto the Lord. The strong brother eats heartily and gives God thanks. The weak brother eats vegetables and gives God thanks. Now, what does that do to verse 9? What does that do to verse 9? I suppose a number of times we might have used this verse to prove, we could have used it to prove that Christ didn't rise from the dead immortal. That would be a gross misuse of the verse, even though the end truth is correct. We might say, well, for to this end Christ both died and rose and revived, which proved that he rose from the grave and then he revived afterwards. In other words, he rose from the grave in a corruptible state, he was then changed to immortality. We might have used that verse in that way. We might have. I did. I hope it was a long time ago. I think I was taught that, actually. In fact, I think I know who taught me that. But anyway, that's by the way. Really, to start with, it's got nothing to do with the subject. And secondly, you'll find that most translations don't put those three steps in. They'll just say something like, well, we've got the NASB again. It says, for to this end Christ died and lived again. That's all it says. Christ died and lived again. What are we picking up here? Here's our living and dying, isn't it? Christ had that perfectly balanced life. He was able to live and to die, if you like. Now, what did he do? To this end, Christ died and lived again, that he might be Lord both of the dead and of the living. Who is he the Lord of? The ones that are alive and on the earth and the ones in the graves? No, he's not talking about that. He's saying Jesus Christ is Lord. He is the Lord Jesus Christ both to the strong brother, the living one, and to the weak brother, the dying one. And Christ himself died and lived. The Lord Jesus Christ abstained from evil, but he saw no problem in eating with the publicans and the sinners. But he never did anything wrong himself. The Lord didn't go around saying, I can't eat with those people. He said on one occasion he was Lord of the Sabbath because his disciples were doing certain things which some of the weak brethren, quote, they might not have been brethren, but they were weak, said he was doing the wrong thing. And then when he went and ate with the publicans and sinners, they said, you're doing the wrong thing. In fact, it didn't matter what he did, he was doing the wrong thing. So look at verse 9 then. To this end, Christ both died
and lived again, that he might be Lord both of the dead and the living.
Now, I believe we've got the colour in dead as green and living as red. Because in the context of Paul's argument, he says, who are you, strong brother, despising your weak brother? Who are you, weak brother, passing judgment on your strong brother? Because you both are related to the same Lord. He is the Lord of the living and the dead.
Not so much those who are breathing and those who are in the graves, but of those who are living two different types of lives, but they're both doing it unto the Lord, and the issues are non-fundamental.
Good illustration in Matthew 11, where it speaks of Christ and John the Baptist. It says, for John came neither eating nor drinking, and they yes. say the demon. But the Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, you're not a God of man and a drunkard.
That's a good one. What's the quote?
Matthew 11. Verse 18, for it starts with the early. Because he's criticizing the generation that no matter which act is taken,
Matthew 11:18. I'm not sure whether that might be in the notes here somewhere, I don't recall, but that is a very good quote, isn't it, because it does pick up that point. Did the people at the back get that quote? Matthew 11, can you read it out in a nice loud voice please, Stuart, and suddenly looking it up so the people at the back can hear. Matthew 11 verse 18.
For John had neither eating nor drinking, and they say he has a demon. The Son of Man came eating and drinking, and they say, behold, a gluttonous man and a drunkard, a friend of the tax gatherers and sinners. Yet wisdom is vindicated by his ears.
Right. Don't think we'll get into an argument here as to whether we would therefore classify John the Baptist as a weak brother. Don't think that's quite the issue. But then again, there might be a sense in which he certainly did balance, he was biased towards the abstaining aspect of life. And there was nothing wrong with that. That was his role to play.
John, the account of
Colossians 2, I don't recall whether there's anything on Colossians 2. I don't think so. Yes.
Formulated on the same argument with Christ that emerged in the chapter 3, with his Christ being risen.
Yes.
The argument was judging on mixing new moons and Sabbaths and natural things. Let no man be guided on these things.
Right, well.
So it sets out a beautiful, simple argument and with the same concept.
That's the touch not, taste not, handle not argument, isn't it?
Yeah, and
the Colossians 2.
Perish,
I think it's an excellent quote. I might save that till Sunday week, seeing the readings Colossians 1 that day, and that's nearly Colossians 2, so. And that'll save me dealing with it now, so I can keep going. Thanks, James. Right, verse 10. But why dost thou judge thy brother? Why dost thou judge thy brother? What colour's that? Green? Why dost thou judge? And I'm going to colour thy brother in red, because, you know, it is really speaking about the strong one. Admittedly, he's speaking to the weak one. Someone might say, well, look, I'm colouring them all in as to who he's speaking to, not necessarily about. Well, all right. Why dost thou judge thy brother? So that's green and then red. Or why dost thou set at naught thy brother? That now becomes red. Why dost thou set at naught? And thy brother becomes green. So once again, we've got our terms. The judging was what the weak brother was doing. And the expression set at naught, on the top of page 120, you'll see the Greek word is exothenio, to make utterly nothing of, and to see the note on despise, verse 3, which is the same word. So it's the same word as despise, therefore it shows us that Paul is following that argument through. The weak brother is judging or condemning the strong brother is despising or setting at naught the one he considers the weak brother. So there's our colouring. Why do you, the weak brother, judge the strong brother? And why do you, the strong brother, set at naught the weak brother?
for we shall all stand before the judgment seat of Christ. And once again, another verse which we would have used in lectures to prove that we've all got to stand before the judgment seat of Christ. That is true, but it's not the argument that Paul's making. Paul is saying, look, don't go around judging each other or despising each other. Worry about the fact that we're all going to stand before the judgment seat of Christ. That's where we have to give an answer for those things. So yes, if we like, we can use it tentatively in a lecture to prove that we will stand there, but let's bear in mind that Paul wasn't using it to prove that point. And of course, lecturing brethren appreciate there are many occasions where you use quotes to prove something in a lecture, and you wince a little bit knowing that wasn't exactly what the writer meant, but it's not wrong either. I do try to avoid them if possible. It gets a bit tricky at times, doesn't it? We can move on. Verse 11, for it is written, as I live, saith the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall confess to God. So then every one of us shall give account of himself to God. I don't think I'll make any other comments on that, but there are quite extensive notes here that you might like to go through at your leisure. Verse 13, let us not therefore judge one another any more, but judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. Who's he talking to here? I guess it's getting a bit warm and time's getting on a bit and maybe our brain's slowing down. This isn't an easy one. See if we can just gear it up for this one. Who's he talking to in this verse? Any suggestions? I'll concede that the first part of the verse I think is a general one, although the word judge is there, but someone might want to make that the weak brother, but I'm suggesting we can take that generally. But judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. Who's he talking to in those verses? Who's likely to put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall? Strong brother, what would he do? What would he do? Put a stumbling block. What about the occasion to fall? Occasion to fall. Greek, scandalon, a trap or a snare. A trap or a snare. Who's setting a trap or a snare for the other brother? Could it be the weak one? I think there's a... Our notes are going to say that anyway. Our notes are saying, this the weak brother does to the strong by condemning him as liberal and setting a trap which sets him at naught or causes him to fall in the eyes of his brethren. I would accept the fact that there may be others who would have a difference of opinion on that one, but anyway, that's the way the notes say it.
Wouldn't in the first half of the verse be the same thing? In other words, he's saying, don't judge each other. You make sure that you take personal responsibility for not putting those stumbling blocks in there.
What, in terms of colours, how would you colour it in then?
All green.
All green. Is this going to be a consensus? Because we'll do it.
Well, the first half and
you're going to make it all green, even the stumbling block part. No, the stumbling block was the strong brother. Certainly, see, Corinthians 8 makes that very clear. It's the strong brother who can eat the meat that is causing his weaker brother to stumble. The stumbling block very definitely seems to be the strong brother.
I get the feeling from the way the verse is worded that he's dealing with both aspects. All the aspects that are a problem, but he's sort of pulling them all together, going through it together and saying, let's get on with this. And so it's worded as a very uniting sort of phrase, even though it deals with both aspects.
I think once we get through verse 14, he then sort of does away with this business of trying to balance out both groups in the verses. I think 13 and 14 is sort of the last attempt to deal with these two specific groups and identify them as either judging or despising, casting stumbling blocks or occasion to fall. Tell you what we've got. I've got here, and I'll show you the colour. No man put a stumbling block, I've got red, particularly with 1 Corinthians 8 in mind, and the possibility that an occasion to fall would be what the weak brother is doing to the strong one. So the suggestion is, and I want to move on. We're not going to finish the chapter, I don't think. We did start a little late. The clock was slow. Graham, I'm sure Graham must have talked for too long. Did you talk for too long? Oh, did you? Oh, anyway, we'll take a few more minutes and just get down to a section here. We'll leave you to think about this rather than pick up any discussion. Suggestion is that no man put a stumbling block is the strong brother. An occasion to fall is the action of a weak brother. Verse 14 says, I know and am persuaded by the Lord Jesus that there is nothing unclean of itself. Who is that speaking of? It speaks of the strong brother, and Paul is identifying with the strong brother, isn't he? Now this is where the argument gets important. I know and am persuaded, and all this is read by the Lord Jesus, that there is nothing unclean of itself. So Paul now is identifying himself with the strong brother. Now he's going to tell us how he would therefore treat the weak brother. He's not going to despise him. He's going to be careful not to put a stumbling block in his way. And the rest of that verse then says, To him that esteemeth anything to be unclean, to him it is unclean. That's green. Right? So what he's really done up to this point is to show to us that there is the possibility of two extremes. The weak brother standing in judgment on the strong brother. The strong brother despising the weak brother. Now he's indicated that we've got to accept that you can have these two types of people in an ecclesia. We know now what not to do. The question is what to do. And I think really that's going to be a reasonably substantial part of the next class, and therefore it wouldn't be right to try and squeeze it in tonight. But perhaps just so that we don't leave it hovering, should we just read together through to the end of the chapter, and then we can leave it at that, and we can all go away and think about then what Paul is really saying and develop his exhortation a little bit more closely, God willing, next time. So verse 15. But if thy brother be grieved with thy meat, and I'm going to suggest this is all the strong brother he's talking to here, now walkest thou not in love. Destroy not him, the weak brother, with thy meat,